the guilt of the conscience. It can eat away at a person without end. Only if a person confronts their guilt and accepts what has happened can they move on. However, some guilt is so powerful, so punishing, that a person can do nothing but succumb to its influence. Emily Gardner, a 19-year-old college student, woke up in the early hours of a frigid January morning and stared at the ceiling. After several minutes, she rolled out of bed and started walking toward the nearby state forest. Wearing nothing but her pajamas, Emily, barefoot, hiked to the top of the forest mountain. There, she joined a line of other people who had done the same as she had and waited until it was her turn. Once the line had moved and she was standing at the edge of the mountain overlooking her hometown of Faith and watching as the sun began to rise, Emily Gardner began to cry. And she cried long and hard before she dove off the mountain and plummeted to her death. Her body landed and was impaled by the sharp branches of the trees below. It wasn't long before the branches began to devour the corpse. I'm Agent Kai, and I've decided to make my reports for Lyos in the form of a podcast. My hope is that you, dear listener, will discover the truth of this world and open your eyes to it. The wind howled as I made my way through the empty streets of Faith and into the Fukien Cafe. I ordered a coffee and took a seat by the window. As the coffee warmed me up, I couldn't help but think that the world had grown colder somehow. Perhaps it was the dark gray clouds hovering over this town that gave off that impression, but, deep down, I knew the clouds had nothing to do with it. "Excuse me, are you Ever Monte?" I looked up and saw a young woman, the barista who had served me the coffee. "Monte, yes, that's me," I said. "You must be Haley Weston. Please, join me." "How'd you know it was me?" Haley said, sitting down. "No one else in this town knows my name," I said, taking a sip of my coffee. Only a woman named Haley Weston was told who I was. "This is good coffee, by the way." Haley smiled. "Thanks. Okay, cool, man. Just making sure I'm talking to the right person." She glanced around the empty cafe and raked away a strand of strawberry blonde hair from her face. "Can't trust anybody in this town." A couple weeks prior to my arrival in Faith, one of Lyle's intelligencers submitted a disturbing report that the townsfolk of Faith were sacrificing themselves to trees by jumping off the top of Faith Falls and onto the trees below the mountain. The report of this intelligencer said that more information was to come once they, the intelligencer, investigated the site. However, this is where the report ended, for the intelligencer sacrificed themselves to the trees thereafter. Before the intelligencer went to investigate, which was against Lyle's protocol for intelligencers, they spoke to Haley Weston and informed her of a man named Ever Monte, one of my legends, and to contact Ever should anything happen to them. And sure enough, when the intelligencer died, Haley reached out to me via email. "So, Miss Weston," I said, "what is so urgent that you need to see me in person?"
"Well, I'm sure Hans told you what's been going on here."
"I don't know Hans," I said, "but my friend Haas told me that something strange was taking place here." Haley smiled and nodded.
"Okay, good. You're the right guy then. Haas was right. Weird shit is going down here for sure."
After I informed Haley of what I knew about the townsfolk sacrificing themselves to trees, she began to tell me about what she'd experienced, or rather, what her best friend Emily Gardner experienced. During their winter break from college, Emily met a guy named Gregory Post, a law student who had recently moved to Faith. They met at a local bar, the Bear and the Honey Pot, and hit it off. "Of course," Haley said, "it didn't take much for a guy, especially one who was built like Adonis, to hit it off with Emily." "Em was a whore," Haley said.
I'm sorry for the foul language, Mr. Monte, but it's the truth. Listen, I love Em more than anything. She's my ride or die. But she gave herself up to everyone. So I wasn't surprised when, a few days later, Em told me she was dating Gregory.
He was just another guy on Emily's long list of romances, Haley went on. But that changed when Emily began acting odd.
Em started talking about how there's no God in the world, Haley said, and how human existence is nothing more than a nihilistic one? I mean, what the fuck did that mean?
It's a philosophical view on life, I said. Basically, everything in existence is meaningless, and therefore it doesn't matter what you do. So just do things that please you, for they don't matter. Haley gave me a blank stare.
Well, that's stupid.
It's a flawed view of life, I agree.
Do you think life is meaningless?
I do not. I think life has meaning. For those of us who are alive, that's our job. To give meaning. Life owes us nothing, but to each other, we owe everything. Haley nodded.
That's deep.
I took a sip of my coffee. Thank you. You were saying about Emily?
Right, where was I? Oh, so Em goes on talking some more bullshit.
Aside from nihilism, Emily began questioning her life choices. She started crying and talking about all the horrible things she'd done. How once, when she was a kid, she'd taken a kitten and slammed its face into a wall several times just to see what would happen to it. How, when she was in middle and high school, she'd use sex to get what she wanted from guys and girls. And how, as a young adult, she'd use drugs to make herself feel wanted by others. Emily went on like this for days until Haley asked what was going on with her. It wasn't until Gregory's name was mentioned that it made sense. Somehow, Haley said, this Gregory had manipulated Emily and turned her from a rambunctious woman into a depressed and loathsome shadow of herself. Therefore, Haley, doing what she always did when Emily was in trouble, went to the source of the problem to take care of it. Gregory Post was a frightening man. While he welcomed Haley and Emily to his condo with a warm smile, there was something cold behind his green eyes. Haley didn't like it and wanted to leave. In fact, she told Emily that they should go, but Emily was already wrapped in Gregory's arms and wasn't listening. Haley sat in the living room and listened to Gregory talk about the way of nature and how humans weren't part of it, that all humans do is destroy and hate, and that amends must be made in order to restore balance to the world.
Really? Haley said, watching as Emily kissed Gregory's neck. And how are humans supposed to do that?
By becoming one with nature, Gregory said, his piercing green eyes fixated on Haley.
Come, Haley, join us.
Haley stood up and started toward Gregory and Emily when she stopped.
What the frack?
Haley said, shaking her head.
Ew, no. Em, we need to get out of here.
No, Haley, Emily said. Come here. I want to feel you and Gregory.
Oh my God, forget this.
As Haley made her way out of the condo, Gregory said that God had left humanity long ago and that a goddess had arrived.
It wasn't long after that, maybe a couple days, that Em went up to Faith Falls and jumped.
Haley wiped away tears at the back of her hands.
It was around this time that Haas told me about the trees. Tell me about you.
Haley paused.
Who are you, Mr. Monte? Why is it that Haas trusted you?
I'm an arborist, I said. I study trees. But before that, I was a member of the New Jersey Search and Rescue Unit.
Haas and I both were on that unit.
Together, we were able to rescue several lost hikers and locate several bodies throughout the wilds of New Jersey. All this information, dear listener, was nothing more than a fabrication. Of course, Blade had used his tricks to ensure that NJSAR had records of an Evermonte and Haas Millpond on file.
Oh wow, Haley said. I see. And you're familiar with Fate State Forest?
I nodded.
Okay, good. And what if I told you that I believe this Gregory guy is behind the deaths of this town, of Emily, of Haas. I'd say I'd agree with you, I said. There's something unusual about this Gregory post. Yeah, there freaking is, Haley said, making fists of her hands. And you want to know the worst and weirdest part of it all? Every time I try to confront that son of a bitch, try to call him out on his murders, all I do is fall into his arms. That's all I want to do. And have him take me away into the woods. Like, what the F? I don't like him at all. So why the frack do I feel this way? Did he hypnotize me?
I don't think it's hypnosis, I said. But let's go see if we can find out.
Haley and I hiked out to the trees where the bodies were being impaled. It had started snowing by the time we reached the area, and the ground had gone from a muddy mess to a clean white covering. When we were within a few hundred feet of the trees in question, I told Haley to stop. There were four trees that stood out from the rest of the conifers and deciduous trees located here. The pitch pines and field maples seemed to be growing around these four trees, trees that had crimson leaves hanging from the long, thick branches that almost seemed to reach out toward us. The roots were ribboned and also styled in that reaching fashion.
What is it? Haley said.
Is it the leaves?
Yeah, I thought it was weird that it still had its leaves on too. But I read somewhere that some trees don't lose their leaves in winter.
It's not that, I said. These trees aren't native to New Jersey or the States. How long have these trees been here?
Haley shrugged. Not sure, maybe always? I've never paid attention.
She paused.
What's the deal with these trees?
They're Joboko trees, I said.
Jo-what?
Joboko, dear listener, is a yokai tree. Basically, a standard-looking tree that feeds on the blood of humans. According to legend, when a person passes by too close, the Joboko uses its long, thick branches to capture the person, then, turning its branches into a tube, begins to drain the person's blood. Joboko that look like strong and healthy trees are said to be well-fed.
You're kidding me, right?
Haley said. Don't go near it, I said. It will scoop you up. And judging by how strong and fresh these trees look, I'd say these Joboko have been feeding off the dead quite well. The air was calm as snow fell silently onto the ground. I was about to tell Haley we should turn back when a loud thump shattered the silence. A river of crimson ran down the trunk of one of the four trees and began to spill into the snow. As the blood continued to trickle down the trunk, large holes reminiscent of an octopus's suckers appeared. Within seconds, the blood began to disappear into the tree and the trunk thickened. Then, another thump, and another, and yet another. All four Joboko were covered in blood. On top, their canopies were bodies dangling from spiked branches. It didn't take long for these corpses to be drained of blood, causing the bodies to deteriorate until nothing but skeletons remained. Haley looked at the horrific scene for a moment.
Did you know that my father was a drunk piece of shit? Haley said. And despite the fact he left my brother and me alone with our insane, psychotic mother, my brother, Mark, still wanted to live with Dad. I remember once I told Mark that I wish he would go live with our father and that he would grow to become an alcoholic and die. That I wish they both die.
Haley, I said.
Mark did go live with Dad, Haley said. He ran away from home to go live with that piece of shit. And then when Mom said she didn't care Mark was living with Dad, I said whatever. I could have gone and dragged Mark's skinny ass home, but I didn't. I was mad at him for leaving, for choosing to live with Dad instead of me. Well, a day or two later, Mark was in the car with Dad, drunk, of course. They both were. And they crashed into the Ridgepoint Bridge before going over into the Ridgepoint River. They both died. At least that's what we were told. Their bodies were never found.
Haley, I said, don't let that thought consume you. Haley turned to me.
What's the point of living in this world when all we do is hate each other? It's not natural. I think what I need to do is become one with nature to correct my faults as a human.
The web of our life is of a mingled yarn, good and ill together, I said.
Haley blinked twice and shook her head. What the hell just happened? You were telling me about your brother and how he died. Really? Why the hell would I tell you that? Haley said, looking up at the jumble of trees as branches. Holy shit! Are those bodies? Haley, I think you've been— Freeze! Hands in the air! 4 men in police uniforms appeared, guns cocked and aimed at us. Sheriff Harris? Haley said, hands in the air. There's people on the trees. I think there's more jumping from the top of the mountain. Keep your mouth shut, Haley, Harris said. He turned to me. And who the hell are you? My name's Evan Monte, I said. I'm an arborist studying trees here. Is that so? Harris said, grinning. You hear that, boys? We got ourselves a tree hugger, he chuckled. You said your name is Evan Monte? He scoffed. What is that, Mexican? No, sir, I said. My surname is of Spanish, Portuguese, and Italian descent, but I'm an American. Bullshit, Harris snarled. No way your parents are American. No way you're American. With all due respect, sir, I said, I don't think that's any of your business. I'm an officer of the law, Monte, and everything in this town and its surroundings is my business. Another thump echoed throughout the woods. Sheriff Harris, Haley said. People are dying up there. We have— Damn it, Haley. Didn't I tell you to keep your pretty little mouth shut? He paused and glanced at Haley. Where's your friend, Emma, or whatever her name is? Emily. And she's dead. Oh, that's a damn shame, Harris said. She was a fine piece of ass. The sheriff's men chuckled. Fuck you, Harris, Haley said. Oh, don't get all upset now, darling. You have a fine ass yourself. He motioned his men to start in our direction. Arrest these two. For what? Haley said. You should arrest yourself for harassment and racist remarks. The sheriff's men began making their way toward us, but they had gotten too close to the Joboku. Within the blink of an eye, the Joboku tree's thick branches scooped up all 3 of the police officers, began draining them of their blood. In the instant, Sheriff Harris stared at his men getting murdered by the Joboku. I grabbed some fresh snow and threw it at Harris. This was enough to distract the man, while I disarmed him and gave him a strong right hook that sent him onto the ground. I grabbed Haley by the hand, and we started to hike to the top of the mountain. There was a single file line of townsfolk who were waiting their turn to jump off the mountain. Haley and I split up to try and shake these people out of whatever madness had affected them. She took the middle, I took the front of the line. The next person up to jump was a middle-aged man, portly man in a suit. I tried speaking to him, but he would only repeat the same thing over and over. I stole those kids' futures, he said. I embezzled the school's money to buy a new house. I partook in ruining the future of children. The man jumped off the cliff without a sound. A young woman, wearing nothing but a graphic tee and track marks all over her arm, was next. I chased the cloud more than my own son, she said. Even now, all I want is another high. That's not right. I'm not right. The woman dove off the cliff in silence. Haley ran over to me. It's no use, she said. These people are hypnotized or something. They won't listen to me. Same on my end. Gunfire shattered the eerie silence. Sheriff Harris appeared with more of his men. You two are starting to get on my nerves, he said. Grab them! The line of jumpers turned and took hold of Haley and myself. Harris walked up to us. You're both under arrest. It had been several hours since Sheriff Harris had put Haley and I into the jail cell of the Faith Police Department. Once or twice, his officers walked by to check on us, and when they did, they were chewing on human fingers. Haley didn't notice. I thought it best to keep this morbid fact to myself. What the fuck? Haley said. It's Harris? He's hypnotizing the people of Faith to kill themselves? I shook my head. No, it's not Harris. How do you know? Listen, I don't know this Harris guy, but one thing I do know is that he's ignorant. That tells me that he doesn't have the intelligence to brainwash a person, let alone an entire town. So who is it that you're thinking? Haley said. Oh, wait, duh. Gregory. I nodded. You would seem like that's top suspect. Haley smiled. So I was right, she frowned. Wait, how come I ruled him out? Sometimes we're blinded by what's in front of us that we forget what we're really seeing.
Yeah, I guess so.
One of the officers appeared and escorted us into a small interrogation room. It wasn't long until a well-built man wearing a white t-shirt and sweeper coat walked into the room. His long hair was unruly in a fashionable sense. He sat down in front of us and interlocked his fingers. He had 6 digits in each hand. It's post, Haley said under her breath.
Sheriff Harris tells me you've been a bad girl, Haley, Post said. Mind telling me why you've been giving the man a hard time?
There's people. What game are you playing here, Post? I said. What are you gaining from killing off a bunch of randos from a nowhere town? Post looked at me and rolled his eyes. You will speak when spoken to. He turned to Haley. Now, baby girl, what's going on? Don't... You see, I understand the Yoboko trees, I said. They gain the blood of the dead. But you, well, what are you getting? Brownie points with your boss? Post turned to me and grimaced. I said, you will speak when spoken to. And let me take a wild guess as to who your boss is, I said. Tamamo no Mei. She put you up to this, didn't she? That's it. You will get up and hike up to Faith Falls and sacrifice yourself. Without a wingsuit? That sounds suicidal. I shook my head. Nah, I think I'm going to sit right here and ask you some more questions. Post leaned back, wide-eyed. He then glanced over at the two-way mirror. When he did, I noticed 2 protrusions coming from the side of his head. Horns, hidden by the mass of his Timothée Chalamet hairdo. What are you doing in New Jersey? I said. Are there more of you around the world doing the same thing as here? Post stood up and looked at the two-way mirror again. Harris, get in here with your men and take care of this annoyance. He turned to Haley. Haley, my pet, come with me. Haley stood up. Fight it, Haley, I said. Don't let his suggestion consume you.
I can't, she said. I want to go with him so bad.
She winced. No, I don't. Haley, love. I'm not going to say it again. Come. Haley moaned. Oh, God, I have to go with him. Haley and Post left the room just as Harris and 2 of his men, big stout ones, walked in.
Well, well, Monte, Harris said. Looks like you've gone and fucked it. Why'd you kill Haley? That's what the world will read about once we're done with you. He laughed. Boys, go on in there and tell them limb from them.
The first officer came at me fast and launched a left hook. I grabbed the man's arm with my left and used my right to break his arm. As big as the man was, he screamed and stared at his bones sticking out of his arm. He took a couple steps back, enough for me to kick in his right leg, more exposed bone, sending him to the floor. The second officer pulled out his gun and opened fire. I turned the table over to catch the bullets and threw the metallic chair in his direction. The chair hit hard, causing the second officer to fumble his gun. In the seconds it took him to gather his balance and grasp his gun, I was in front of him, delivering a few forbidden strikes on his body's pressure points using the sides of my hands and wrists. Of course, I disarmed him and threw the gun across the room. I backed off and watched as the second officer started for me, stopped midway, and fell to the ground and began convulsing. Harris had run off when he saw his goons weren't going to be enough to stop me. I wanted to go after him, but instead, I chose to run over to where I had parked my car. Now that I knew who, or rather what, I was dealing with, I had to grab my gear and try to help Haley before that Oni infected her more and made her jump off Faith Falls. I had parked the Lyles-issued Audi RSQ8 a mile outside of town, hidden by a dense patch of boxwoods and spruce. I opened the rear gate and pulled out a few items that would help me stop Gregory Post, or rather, the Oni impersonating a human. An Oni, dear listener, is a demon of Japanese origin. These types of yokai are lethal and cannot be reasoned with in any way. Their sole purpose is to spread madness and death, given enough time, bring down society itself. They live deep in the mountains and feed off murder and cannibalism. Each Oni varies in their abilities. Some possess super strength, while others control lightning and thunder, and others still possess all these abilities. The one here in Faith, from what I gathered, seems to possess the ability to intoxicate its victims through the power of suggestion. All the townspeople of Faith were infected by this Oni, and have since been sacrificing themselves to the Yoboko trees. If I had to guess, I'd say Emily was infected by Post initially when they kissed, and then Emily, through no fault of her own, infected Haley through her own nihilistic rantings. And when Haley tried to confront Post, his voice only strengthened the infection of his suggestive thoughts already forming inside Haley's mind. When Post speaks to his victims, he's using a double voice. The first voice is what the person hears. The second voice is subliminal. When Post spoke to Haley back at the police station, he must have been bringing back the memory of Haley's brother, Mark, and, like a drug, making her mind believe that the only way to get rid of the self-imposed guilt is to do as Post says. Post tried doing this to me as well. He brought out a deep memory of mine, the one concerning a family member who died because I failed to help them, a memory I've hidden deep in the filing cabinets of my memory. However, this memory, like so many others, was nothing more than a fabrication I conjured up to deflect his attack. Lyles trains their agents well, dear listener, but there is a cost an agent must pay for such defenses. I pulled out a small metallic box that contained a simple-looking coin called Heaven's Shine. On the coin, the portrait of the Japanese sun goddess Amaterasu was embedded into it. This coin, when thrown at an Oni, will stick to the Oni's forehead and engulf them in heaven's light, trapping them inside the coin and devouring their darkness bit by bit. The second item I grabbed was a small bottle containing a horticultural pheromone used to communicate with trees. If I was going to help the town of Faith, those Yoboko trees would have to go. And what better way to knock out an invasive plant if not with the help of native plants? As I closed the rear gate, I heard the sound of a truck screaming down the desolate road. The infotainment screen of the Audi began to blare. I hopped into the car and saw through the RSQ-8's modified drone camera that there was a tricked-out Ford Raptor carrying several what appeared to be half-bred Oni, humans that must have been given Post's blood to drink, and now they were devils on the hunt for murder and blood. Probably my blood, as the pickup truck was slowing down as it neared my position. I didn't have time to deal with this insanity. Therefore, I put the Audi in gear and floored it. The V8 engine roared as I flew onto the main road and started for Faith Falls, the Raptor behind me. Glancing at the infotainment, which was displaying the rear camera, I noticed it was Harris who was behind the wheel of the Hell Truck. He must have drank Post's blood, for the once ignorant sheriff of Faith was now a human devil. His grin was wide, exposing sharp teeth, his eyes burning red, and blood-stained horns ripping out of his skull. I wasn't going to be able to hold off Harris and his devil squad and still have time to make it up to the mountain in time to save Haley. Therefore, I decided to take the RSQ-8s for a spin. Using the infotainment, I pressed the option labeled Combat Mode. Within seconds, the Audi's weapon systems were displayed on the center console. As I made a sharp right to jump onto the dirt road that led up to the top of Faith Falls, I unleashed my first wave of attack, rust mites. Quarter-sized round balls that exploded on impact, releasing trillions of nanobots that ate away metal. It was a direct hit as the rust mites made contact with the Raptor's hood, but the mites would take several minutes to disable that monster of a pickup. I made a left up the winding and bumpy road. Using one hand to control the steering wheel, I used the other to insert the small bottle of horticultural pheromones into the middle of the steering wheel. This would travel through the modified wheel's tube, crush the bottle, and release the pheromones through the Audi's outdoor vents. I didn't have time to enjoy the process because Harris's devil sprouted wings and flew over and landed on the roof and hood of the Audi. They began to scratch the car with their claws. The two on the roof were beginning to tear their way inside. The one in front of me was banging on the windshield and blocking my view. I had to switch over to the camera shield in order to see the road ahead of me. A virtual screen was displayed in front of the windshield that blocked out the devil human and only showed the road using the camera on the Audi's headlamps. I then initiated the blue wave, an electric wave powered by Thor's own lightning, Cameron had told me once, and had the entire exterior of the Audi electrified. I could see the Audi through the RSQ-8's drone feed, a moving vehicle of lightning. The devils on the roof and hood were burnt to dust. There was a fork on the road, one going up and the other heading down. I chose to go down toward the Yoboko trees, but before I made that turn, I released Yorgomo's children. The rear brake lights slid open and released a dozen spiders that landed on the raptor's windshield. They pierced through all the glass and began to feast on the flesh of Harris and his insane double posse. This was enough to drive Harris insane and cause him to flip his pickup truck several times on the small congested road. I had to speed up in order to avoid his truck slamming into mine. Whether Harris survived or not, I didn't stick around to see. When I arrived at the Yoboko trees, the trees surrounding them had begun to tear these invader trees apart. The horticultural pheromone worked in warning the trees of this forest that these Yoboko trees were no good and needed to be kicked out. The native trees of the forest responded. The Yoboko trees were losing their red leaves and their branches were beginning to sag. Trees can be vicious to those plants who don't play fair. I jumped out of the car and went up to one of the dying Yoboko trees with an empty bottle in my hand. The tree tried to snatch me up with a branch, but it was blocked by the native trees surrounding it. One of the other trees squeezed the Yoboko's branch so hard that it snapped and sap began to seep out of it. I used the bottle to collect as much of the sap as possible. Then I started toward the top of the mountain. The line of more townsfolk, including Haley, were once again jumping off one by one. Post was walking up and down the line, reinforcing his lethal suggestions so that the line would move faster. If I was going to have a shot of saving Haley and the others, I needed to eliminate Post. I walked out toward the Oni. "You can stop this," I said. "You can save these people from pointlessly dying." Post turned around and frowned. "You don't die, do you?" He walked up to me. "I'm not stopping anything. All these humans are guilty of sins, and they will all die for their sins." "What's in it for you?" I said, grabbing him by his coat. "Tamamo no Mei will not give you anything. She'll kill you once she no longer needs your services." Post grinned. "Such is life." He looked over my shoulder and jerked himself free of my grip. "If you fail to kill him here, I will personally kill you both." Behind me was Harris. His entire body was shattered and bleeding. His horns were starting to elongate and devour his head and face. "You die, Master Happy," Harris said, his voice suffocating. "You're already dead, Harris." Harris hobbled his way toward me. Once he was within a few feet, I grabbed one of his horns and snapped it in half. He roared, and roared more when it plunged his horn in between his eyes. The former sheriff of Faith fell onto the ground, lifeless. The spiders had devoured his internal organs and were now consuming the rest of his being. Harris, being able to hike up to the top of the mountain before fully succumbing to Yorogomo's children, was impressive. However, it was probably the only blood that allowed him to get so far. In the end, the spiders got their fill. "Son of a bitch," Post said. "Why are you so fucking annoying? Just die already." "You first," I said. "End him." At my command, the spider I had attached to Heaven's Shine, the coin I had slipped into Post's coat pocket, sprang to life and crawled up to Post's forehead. The small spider was fast and avoided all of Post's attempts at grabbing it. Once on the forehead, the spider spun its web and stuck the coin smack in the middle. Post tried to rip off the coin, but it was too late. Heaven's Shine burst into a bright light and, within the blink of an eye, had devoured the Oni known as Gregory Post. I ran up to the front of the line where Haley was about to jump off.
Haley, I said, fight it. Use your mind. Fight off the false suggestion.
I can't, Haley said. She dove off the mountain.
When I reached the edge of the cliff, a bright light shot out from above the cloudy night sky. Then Haley, floating in this beam of light, was brought up and placed on the ground. The bright light then ran through all of those in line and, like a stack of dominoes, all the townsfolk fell to the ground. I ran up to Haley and gave her a drop of sap of the yoboko tree. The yoboko tree sap, dear listener, was the only thing that could break the Oni's suicidal suggestions. Once I had given a drop of sap to everyone who was in line, I looked up to the skies to see if I could spot the UAP that had helped me out. And there, hovering a few feet away from the mountain, was Skyward. Meet me in Le Ciel. The voice was familiar. It was Talku. The town of Faith was paid a visit by the mind-altering unit the next morning. All those involved in the suicidal line had their minds wiped clean of all the incidents and thoughts they experienced. Even those townfolk who were unaffected by the Oni's suggestion, the lucky ones, also had their minds probed for security assurance. Haley Weston recovered from her near-death experience. This agent remained in Faith for several days after the incidents that took place on top of Faith Falls to ensure Haley recovered. Once she was out and about again, falling back into her regular routine, this agent had one more cup of coffee from the Fukien Cafe. Haley and this agent engaged in a brief discourse on the nature of life, the universe, and everything. The reappearance of Talku makes this agent wonder why this interstellar being is interested in the goings-on of this world. This agent can only guess that Talku has found something relating to Tamamo no Me in Le Ciel. It's possible, this agent wonders, that Tamamo no Me has planted Joboko trees around the world to spread her roots in all lands. Perhaps Talku can shed some light as to what this yokai has been up to. All of humanity is a participant in this thing called life. There's not a single person on this planet that hasn't made mistakes or hasn't let someone they cared about down, maybe even themselves. People are all guilty of something. Mistakes. Faults. It's what makes people human. It's important to remember that a person should not be measured by their mistakes, but rather by what they do afterward. Let not guilt become an obstacle. Let it be a reminder and an inspiration for progress. Like Edgar from Shakespeare's King Lear observed, "Thy life is a miracle."